Hey, before we get going, I need to open up the tip box and see if we got any tips this week. For people who haven't heard about it previously, we are accepting Lightning Network tips. The address is tippin, T-I-P-P-I-N, .me/@CoinTalkShow. All right, we got a bunch this week. Thanks to everyone. So each of these tips comes with a notes field. That means you can actually give us one Satoshi, a mere fraction of the cent, and still get something read on the show. Or you can give us a lot of money and get something read on the show. It's a new way to advertise or sponsor the show in which you can get your message out. So let's see what these people had to say. One person says, "This show is so much better at 1.7x speed." That makes sense. I agree with that. Then we got a tip here. "Where can an American short XRP with leverage, not Binance?" Instead of answering this question, I'm just going to give you some life advice, which is, if you are trying to make leveraged XRP trades, this is not a good focus for you. This is going to lead somewhere dark. Just don't do it. Okay. Last tip here is, what the fuck is with IOTA 15th and only one podcast with info? So I think they're talking about the coin IOTA, which is like Internet of Things something or other. We agree. IOTA is always the most mysterious top 20 coin, and no one seems to really understand it, although I have heard it called a scam, but you could say that about more than 50% of the top 20 coins. So do your own research. None of this is investment advice. But if I was giving investment advice, I would give you the advice not to buy IOTA. All right, let's do this show. Again, tippin, tippin.me/@CoinTalkShow. Hello, welcome to Coin Talk. The sun is shining. It's a new day at Coin Talk. And we are brought to you by Medium. Medium makes it so easy to read about crypto that it's hard to read about almost anything else on Medium. It's like 90-95% crypto, at least in my feed.
Really?
I'm in the bubble. Look, I'm in a, I mean,
you filter bubbled yourself on Medium.
All I ever do on Medium in terms of writing is posting transcripts to CoinTalk episodes. So it does make sense that Medium thinks I'm only interested in crypto.
So you're in like a filter bubble.
I think that Medium itself like probably has led some people to buy crypto though. And those people who've made all that money on crypto ought to give back and get a $5 a month membership.
That's a good segue.
From Medium. It supports writers. It supports things like this show. Jay, are you ready to do the show?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, April 1st at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $4,140.
Okay, so I don't know when Groundhog's Day is, but I feel like if there was a Groundhog's Week, it was this week. We saw a critter that we haven't seen for some time, FOMO Kang, returning to the surface, poking his head out, looking around in our Telegram channel and saying, "Man, you guys are making all of this Bitcoin on these alts, and I'm a little envious."
Yeah, I think it was... Well, first of all, it was seasonably warm in New York City over the past couple of days,
sure.
You know, and I think that we had a return of the alt spring on the quad, you know, some hacky sacks were brought out.
Second alt spring on the quad. Although last alt spring, I'm not going to go back to look this up, might have been like a full year ago. So maybe this is the first alt spring of this year.
It might have been more than a year ago, yeah. You know, some frisbees are out, there's a little bit of mud, but people aren't worried about that. I just can't remember a time when the little boom, and let's call it a boomlet, in alts and in Bitcoin, was not immediately followed up by like a massive crash, or where it didn't feel like there was going to be a massive crash that was going to follow.
This is how I've celebrated this season. So for people who don't spend a lot of time on crypto, Twitter, and Reddit, the sentiment changed like in the last 2 weeks. And people were saying like everyone was calling it a dip at 6,000, but at like 3,000 and 4,000, people were like, it's going to 1,000.
Yeah.
And I would say that's been the prevailing sentiment for at least several months, maybe 6 months. It's been even among the like I know more about crypto than you, Seth.
Yeah.
Everyone's been like, I know more about crypto, and it's going to go even lower. That's what we've been hearing. And this week, and maybe the week before, is the first time I've seen a pervasive sentiment shift, and both alt and Bitcoin action to follow, but particularly alt action, starting to see a little bit of those that video game feel that brought us to crypto in the first place, that like a double-digit gain followed by an even bigger double-digit gain in back-to-back days. And in keeping with that video game feel, seeing everything from the most prestige alts to the shittiest of the shit all sort of whirring to life simultaneously.
Okay, that part does, we can get to that later because that does concern me a little bit.
It should.
But you know how in the NBA reporting right now, it's become like sort of de rigueur for people to be like, I know things, you know, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
The people who know things are telling me this.
It makes me so mad when people say that shit retroactively. They're like, oh, yeah, actually, I knew LeBron was going to the Lakers, yeah. But I couldn't tell anyone.
Yo, like, for example, like, so one of those drove me absolutely insane, which was that after LeBron left Cleveland,
yeah,
they had this, like, podcast that was a roundtable of the biggest reporters who covered LeBron in Cleveland. So these are people who work either for the Plain Dealer in Cleveland or even work for ESPN.
Yeah.
And they were talking about it. And they're like, yeah, we knew all this was happening. We knew, like, the Kyrie thing before. I'm just like, what is your job? You know, like,
yeah.
Like, is your job not to report things that you know to the public? Now,
no.
I've never been a beat reporter before, right? And I've never been an access journalist. But yeah. I, as somebody who knows these people and generally knows that they are well-intentioned, good people, I have a certain amount of patience for the, look, you can't just blow it all because you'll blow all your sources. You have to go after the bigger story. My question to them was, like, what was a bigger fucking story than Kyrie Irving leaving Cleveland? Like, what are you cashing it in for? Like, is LeBron running for president? Like, is that even a bigger fucking story than Kyrie leaving Cleveland?
Yeah. And additionally, if you knew that Kyrie was going to the Celtics or you knew that LeBron was going to the Lakers, aren't there betting markets? Like, can't you be a rich man on that kind of thing if you really know that shit in advance?
I don't think you can become a rich man considering that some of these people do make a lot of money and they have caps on this sort of stuff. But it's more like, what's your job? You know,
yeah.
Your job is to inform the public about this stuff. Your job is not to sort of broker information to try and get more transactions that you can put out on Twitter. Because I imagine that's what this is. They don't want to burn somebody who's like telling them, oh, look, the Charlotte Hornets are seriously considering trading like Jeremy Lamb this upcoming season. Like, who gives a shit about any of that? Just break the bigger story. Anyway, my point being,
yeah,
I believe that there are sources and there are people who know these things. They're generally agents, right? And there are people who, when they say something, I always believe that it's backed up by something real. Like, so
yep.
Stephen A. Smith is one of these people, even though he gets a lot of flack. Like, if he says something, I generally believe it. Jalen Rose is another one where I feel like if he says something and he's like, I know things, I'm like, okay, like,
yeah.
He knows things. In crypto right now, that version of it, like, the
yeah.
people who know things,
yeah.
the people who speak for them, which are generally, like, a little bit more established people on Twitter,
yeah.
like Ryan Selkis being one of them, you know?
Yeah.
They're basically all reporting that this, like, shadowy cabal of crypto OGs, they've all changed their sentiments over the past few weeks. And that, for reasons that it should not, and I should know better, that actually inspired me to buy some Bitcoin this week, and I am now no longer a no-coiner.
I would say, welcome. Welcome back to the program, Coin Kang. We've missed you.
Oh, I'm back.
I'm glad you've got some skin in the game. I agree. I don't know how these things, like, it would be fascinating to look at how sentiment shifts in that way and what actually shifts it. It's easy to get faked out. Like, there were some people who were like, we've bottomed out at 6,000 or whatever. But when the real everyone leaning one way thing happens, you can just kind of feel like the gravity shift
yeah.
a little bit. And I think that's in a lot of ways what drives the alt market. Like, I think the alt market is more emotional than the Bitcoin market, honestly. Like, when you're always like, news doesn't really move the market, I think that there's something to be said for that in relation to like Bitcoin and potentially even like Ethereum, that there's bigger things going on. But the further you go down the list, the more it's just like licking your finger, putting it in the wind and being like, okay, I feel the wind up 40%.
Yeah.
You know what I
yes.
mean? So alts are moving. I mean, Bitcoin hasn't moved a lot, but it feels like a lot firmer. Like, I would say
well,
Bitcoin at 4,100.
Yeah.
It's above 4,000. It's held a few times. I think this was like the first some odd number of green weekly candles in a row since like 2017.
Yep.
So a bunch of like prime indicators are flipping that haven't flipped for a very long time. My God, has it been a long time since the Bitcoin high.
This is the best series of weeks for Bitcoin in the market, I would say, in like over a year, right?
If I was giving someone advice, and this is not advice, but if there was a noob, this does kind of like feel like one of those moments to buy into crypto. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, bottom's been kind of established.
Or short it hard.
No, but do you think that at all? Like, I'm so convinced that I need to like sort of pinch myself here and go like, is this a trap? Because FOMO Kang does get trapped frequently.
Okay, but I will say that FOMO Kang did call the bottom almost exactly.
It's true.
The Kang line really was the bottom.
Well, it's interesting. Did you sold your Kang line coins, right?
No, I lost it betting.
It's same thing as selling them. You sold them for no money?
Okay. I sold them for $0.
You sold them for $0? We looked at, I think, at the Kang line indicator, and we're expecting it to like, we were like, oh, the Kang line will be confirmed by like a hard bounce off the Kang line. I think we're getting kind of like the slow motion, soft, too much gravity Kang line bounce. And now we've come up enough off of it that I feel pretty comfortable saying that was the bottom.
Yeah, we're like 20% or about 15% off of that, right?
Yeah.
Like
a normal investment, if it took a year to get from the Kang line to here, you'd be like, yeah, we had a good year.
15% would be great. Yeah. Is there still like a rocket fuel left? I guess this is my question, right? Like if there is not rocket fuel left, does that mean we're going to 1,000?
I feel very bullish right now. I honestly have not felt this bullish probably since the last mania.
Yeah, I honestly have not checked into our Telegram and seen like you and the other people in there discussing alts in maybe a year. You know, Doug Kim has started poking his head back around. Which is a huge indicator, I think.
Okay, so everyone knows that this is a non-traditional Bitcoin show. We track different indicators. So one of the big indicators that I look at is, do people want to hear about crypto? And anecdotally, a few new people who I know have been like emailed me and said, hey, I'm interested in crypto. But we have an extra super secret indicator, which is traffic to CoinTalk itself. And I can say that the best show, the highest show ever, was the highest Bitcoin ever. As the market has slowly contracted over the year, so have listeners to this show.
Yeah.
And I get that. Like, it doesn't even make me feel bad.
No, because, it doesn't make me feel bad either.
Because I'm like, I wouldn't want to hear about crypto either. I don't even like talking about crypto.
Well, think about the fact that
I lost
like
a bunch of money.
Yeah, and like the fact that Coinbase has lost 96% of its usage, right, over the
past year. I found
out
that I actually mistook that slightly. There's like a difference between, okay, so I'm just going to call out our errors on here, and our friend LegerStatus explained this.
Okay, because I thought that it was too high, right?
Well, but there's transactions on the blockchain, and then there's volume in exchanges, and most of that volume in exchanges doesn't actually happen on the blockchain. This doesn't relate specifically to Coinbase, but I conflated two forms of volume in last week's episode, which are actual on-chain transactions, which are what are sometimes faked or they're sometimes securing other chains, and then exchange volume, which is basically self-reported. It's like Netflix reporting how many people watched a movie. So all that is to say, we don't actually even know how many people use Coinbase right now.
Okay, but we can comfortably say
it's way down. And we've profiled this person before on the show, right? Here are the two types of people who use Coinbase. People who used Coinbase before and lost a bunch of money in the crash, and new customers. And I think that's pretty much our listening audience here too, right? It's people who were already in crypto before the crash and are holding on. And those people are pretty bummed for most of the last year. And then there's new listeners. And whichever pool it is, we're seeing from 3 weeks ago to 2 weeks ago, we had a 25% jump in listenership.
Wow. So that's...
And last week's going to be even bigger, and I predict this show is going to be even bigger than that.
I mean, were our shows particularly good?
No. It's actually a safe experiment because we half-ass all the shows.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have any big guests. And there's no topic.
That's true. We have no guests.
Like, unless you think my naming an episode Mark Toshi Zuckerberg,
it might be that
juice the numbers. Yeah. Then it's because people are interested in hearing about crypto again.
I think you were bummed that not enough people were.
I was
into
wrong.
Your Mark Toshi.
No, I didn't get
Zuckermoto.
Enough Twitter affirmation.
Yeah, it might be that Twitter is a bad bubble. Though.
The listeners are there, so you're hearing it from here first. Crypto's coming back, and we know. Because there's actual user interest, and those are the people who listen to crypto podcasts.
Okay. I would buy that like 5%. The only thing that I'm fearful of, right, yeah. is
I'm
that
afeared.
I'm afearing that some of the coins that are going up, now they're not moonshotting like they used to now. Like the
Still
great
early days.
The great days of crypto, honestly, were when you and I were on Bittrex and we would both go like click over to the front page where they show all the coins.
Yeah.
And then the ones at the top are the ones that have gone up the most.
Yeah.
And there'd be some coin that we had never heard of that was up like 1400% that day. And then we'd be like, fuck, we missed it. You know?
I think that's back on the way.
Really?
Okay. I mean, not 1400%, but
or like
Ledger 60%. Gave me a couple of hot tips on some young ponies that were running. And I picked
these
up
are new coins?
No, they're not. Well, they're new to me.
Okay. Well, but you've never heard of them.
I had never heard of Enigma previously.
I've never heard of Enigma either. Wait, why didn't he send this to me?
This happened in our Slack channel. People don't even know to send you tips because you don't have any Bitcoin to buy alts with.
Okay, fine. I'm back though.
Okay.
Okay, so
more on that soon. I got some old favorites and some new friends.
Okay.
Some Cardano, a little Enigma.
You bought Cardano.
I tried to buy some Loom, but my buy did not hit, and then it spiked instantly, and I felt stupid.
Loom. Oh, that's new, too, right?
I think Loom was around for
our last
run.
Did you buy Grin?
What's that?
Did you buy Grin?
Well, I didn't buy Grin, because I'm actually, the only thing I have an active account on still is Bittrex, and Grin is not available to U.S. customers.
You don't have a Binance account?
I don't have a Binance. No, Grin's not on Binance.
Oh, do you want to buy my Binance account?
No.
Okay.
So I understand that you had some trouble transferring your Coinbase coins to Binance to catch this FOMO.
They make you sit for 5 days before you can transfer the coins out.
It's like buying a handgun.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, sure you want to transfer these coins to Binance?
But yeah, but most likely I'll transfer them to the Bitcoin sportsbook, but you know.
So after this cool down period, what do you expect you're going to be getting into?
Well, okay,
on Binance?
This is my fear. Going back to my fear. My
fears are my fears.
My fears are that some of the coins that are going up are things that we know are not real, you know? And so, like, if it was basically that entirely new group of coins was ascendant, right?
Yep.
And that they all had different use cases and they were things like Grin that were interesting that you and I talked about on the show. That they had different infrastructures, that they had sort of, the ICO era is over and this is what's new. You know, like we got rid of some of the scamminess of this, or even that the technology has changed. We're not using these types of blockchains. We're going to use this type of blockchain technology. Or even like we, you know, like back in the day, like a year ago, we were conceptualizing the use of blockchain wrong. This is actually how blockchain should be. All those things I would be totally into and I would buy into. But the fact that like some things that have been widely discredited are also going up, that's what makes me a little bit nervous.
Well, wouldn't we be suspicious either way, though? Like, I feel like if there was a whole new crop of upstarts, which I'm not ruling out that this will happen. Like, we got to wait for a little momentum. Those coins are building up from, like, fractions of a cent
right now.
That's
why we should get in now.
I'm in on that also.
Okay,
Talk to Ledger about if we wanted to like really juice our returns with like as much volatility as possible, where we should be putting our money right now. But that would make us suspicious too. If there was a bunch of like new, like the next generation alts, and those were all behaving like last generation alts, wouldn't that be kind of like, oh God, we're just repeating the same cycle?
Yes, but I would be much more willing to make that mistake.
You don't want to get.
I don't want to buy any old
alts.
Coins. Yeah, yeah, I don't want a bag that has any of the things that burned me before in it. I just want new alts.
Okay, but I'm gonna make a counterpoint to that here, since we're supposed to argue with each other on this show, which is when people talk about why is Bitcoin valuable, one of the reasons that it has so much enduring value is how long that blockchain has been going without interruption or breaking down, right? It's really impressive. Bitcoin's been going over for 10 years. All of these return alts, these repeat offender alts, are older and a little wiser now. And the fact that they're still running is in some ways a vote of confidence.
Okay,
for them, no?
A, I would say we don't know that they're running or ever were running, right?
Yes.
Some of these were clearly not ever running. And B, I would say that the winner should have wrecked them. Like, like whatever infrastructure they had, whatever projects they were building should be gone by now. For me, the investment in crypto is to try and moonshot, right? Like, I'm not interested in, like, some sort of incremental return.
Yep.
And I think the better moonshot stuff is just, like, alts we know nothing about. So am I making the same mistakes that I made a year and a half ago?
I think this is where the same attitude you had before.
Yeah, exactly. I've learned nothing.
I'm like, I'd like to double my money, and you're like, 1,000x or nothing.
Yeah, I've learned absolutely, like, if you're trying to sell, I know that Tezos has been doing very well.
Yes.
And, like, there's a narrative in my head where I can say, like, look, this was a real project. Like, regardless how you feel about it, regardless how you feel about the way that they handled everything, like, we had Gideon Lewis Krause, who wrote the Wired piece about it, on the show. Hey, there are a few journalists who I respect their opinion more than Gideon. And if Gideon is telling me that, look, these are true believers and they really wanted to make a project and they're going to stay committed to this project, I would believe him, right? And there is a narrative where you just say that belief and that ability won out, and now people are trying to, they see it as a real thing that could work, right? Like, all that I accept.
Tezos is another one that I feel like looks better with a little gray hair now. Like, a year ago, Tezos had just fucked up majorly. Now the fact they're still at it now, I'm like, oh, I guess maybe they're not scammers.
Yeah, no. And EOS is another one, right?
Like, although all the EOS just got hacked out of BitHum, so
asterisks, yeah,
asterisks.
That's not EOS's fault. that's BitHum's fault. I guess I would just say that, like, yes, well, those things maybe 2x or 3x. I would say maybe, probably. Like, I think that there's, if Bitcoin goes on a run, like, I think EOS and Tezos will definitely also go on a run. Will they outpace Bitcoin? I don't know, you know, but they're less interesting to me because it's less fun.
All right. So
it's like buying Ethereum last year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which, like, it did incredibly well until it crashed down to the earth.
Horribly.
Look, I think our biggest, we're terrible investors. Yeah. Everyone should know we're really bad at trading. But if I look at our biggest mistakes, is we never knew when to, like, jump off the ship. Like, we rode the ship up and down. We had no exit strategy in all of these alts. So for me now, I look at them and I'm like, I mean, my biggest alt bag is still Monero, right? I'm like, okay, Monero's been going forever. People actually use it. It has, like, a real functionality. And it's pretty wrecked against Bitcoin. Like, it's sitting maybe a third of its high against Bitcoin. So I don't really understand the alt market anymore. It's like voodoo at this point, I would say. However, I do believe in Bitcoin. And I believe that as Bitcoin comes back, it seems reasonable that Monero, Tezos, EOS, all of these prestige alts will probably, like, behave somewhat like they behaved before.
Okay, but why wouldn't you just buy Bitcoin then?
Because I lost Bitcoin value on the way down, and I want to get it on the way back up. Because I'm trying to get my money back at this casino.
That's solid. It's like being like, well, sir, you have been splitting sixes against 10, which is terrible, in blackjack. And my advice to you would be to just hit the 12 instead of splitting it to two sixes. And you're like, listen, I lost all this money splitting these sixes, and I'm going to get it back splitting these sixes.
Pretty much exactly. Okay. Pretty much exactly.
Correct. As long as we're clear.
Yeah. I'm betting on the home team. I'm betting to get back the money I lost. And I do think that there's some value in just holding. Like, that Monero bag is the same coins. It's the same bag.
I will say to you, Aaron, that as somebody who, I think I was a no coiner for a very long time,
Pretty much all of 2018.
Yeah, if you count out the short period where I bought the Kang line for a very small investment and then lost it all gambling.
I'm going to have to go back to the tape because I think you said you sold it then, but it's fine if you want to say that you sold your coins when you actually
gambling. No, I lost almost all of it on, like, sports betting. But I didn't, like you said, I bought a very small amount at that point. it is interesting that right now I've basically just fallen into the same bullshit that I did before.
there's no institutional memory
where I'm just like, I need, or like even like desperation to restore a coin. I'm just like, I'm back.
Well, it does.
Let's do the same thing.
I feel like it took 2018 to purge our bad vibes. Like, everyone thinks that the thing that's going to happen is the thing that happened last.
Yeah.
And right after, there was a bull run and a huge crash. For a little bit, people were like, buy the dip. And then after a certain point, people were like, the last thing that happened was a huge crash. Don't buy Bitcoin. And I'm just feeling now like we sort of purged that memory. It's like enough seasons in the past that it's not a reliable gambling guide for the present. The lineup has turned over. The situation has changed enough. I don't know what it is that changed. It's just a feeling. The feeling is no longer that you should avoid crypto because look what just happened.
Yeah. No, I agree.
There's been a mourning period.
We seem to be in a respite from that.
Yeah.
And what we don't know is if like a whole new bunch of bodies are going to show up. But I think that, I don't know, this is definitely the most upbeat I think people have been in a year and a half. I don't think that's deniable. And that maybe is worth something, or maybe it means we're all falling for like another huge trap. But
yeah,
whatever. Definitely. I'm going to fall for it if we fall for it.
Well, I mean, you also see, I know that we act like crypto has not matured or changed at all because like people are like pumping NEO again. But
are they?
I don't know. Ledger just told me to buy NEO, so I assume that they're going to be pumping it soon.
Oh, wow. I was walking with my kid like around the Brooklyn Museum. It was early in the morning. It's a nice day out. And I saw this guy jogging by me in a NEO sweatshirt. Is that a buy or sell signal?
Can we talk about something? I know this is a free-ranging program. Yeah. You know when you like talk about something in real life and then it like appears in your like Instagram like ads feed or something?
Yeah.
And then you're like, what? Are they spying? Like,
yeah.
I'm not the only person saying this. People talk about this online. They're like, is the microphone on or whatever?
Yeah.
And my wife is one person who's convinced that like she talks about things and has no digital interaction with it, and then it appears in her thing.
Me too.
And it feels a little like a glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah.
But like the guy running by you in the NEO sweatshirt is exactly the in real life version of that.
Yeah.
It's like, because Ledger has been shilling NEO
really?
In our Telegram.
And then the guy runs by me.
And you're like,
no.
Are you spying on our Telegram, sir?
Yeah, exactly. They have like some sort of viral marketing
thing
where they just have people running. They're like, okay, he's coming. Okay, just go jog at an exact angle where he'll definitely see your NEO shirt.
Come by him.
Yeah.
Make sure he sees you.
Yeah. Oh, he missed you? Okay, double back. He didn't see you the first time. Just running by someone.
I mean, I literally wouldn't put it past crypto companies to just send people jogging around San Francisco
I believe yeah, or to just like, you know, have taggers basically put their stupid, you know, symbol up as like graffiti. That probably has happened.
So Tezos is an interesting one because Coinbase has basically added the staking service, which is pretty crazy. I don't totally get how this works, but basically you give them your Tezos and there's no risk, and it pays a reward for staking your Tezos of, I think, 7 or 8%, which is funny because that's basically like BitConnect's like claim, but it's like they have like a real way that it actually works. And I guess it's sort of akin to mining in a way, except instead of mining with equipment, you're like getting a reward for letting them hang on to your Tezos.
Sure.
It's not interest, which people were very clear to point out online, but it's interest-like.
Okay.
And I guess I'm like, is Tezos that more legitimate now that it's like part of Coinbase?
I don't know if that's what it is. I think that Tezos basically tanked because of the statements that they gave to the media and because it wasn't ready in time.
Because they let a con man take control of the company?
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when one does that. But I think that at this point, yeah, maybe the Coinbase thing did legitimize it. But
yeah.
I will say that, like, hey, you and I have discussed this on the show a few times. Like, the Coinbase effect, not really happening anymore, you know? Like,
I mean, it did pretty well by Tezos.
But it didn't really do that much for Basic Attention Token, right?
BAT has been pumping like a crazy person. It's at an all-time high.
But not correlated to the move to Coinbase.
It's not right when things get... It's true. it's not day one, but I would say things that are on Coinbase have outperformed the average all.
Okay, but that's not necessarily related. I guess I would just say,
yep.
The thing that I'm fascinated to figure out, which we'll never know, mm-hmm. unless you and I like, you know, do some investigative reporting.
That's your job.
It is not my job. Is how much volume is on Coinbase Pro for these alts? Because you can't buy those things on the regular Coinbase app.
Yeah, it's hard to know in New York because you're not allowed to do it in New York. So yeah, it's not like no one I know
How many transactions are happening with like USDC, which is like whatever the Coinbase Tether thing
Circle.
Is? Yeah. Like how many transactions are happening there? And what are the comparisons of that to the volume on Binance? And that will give you a better sense of like whether or not these alts being on Coinbase actually matter. Because my sense of it is that it's probably pretty low. You know, like I don't think that there's that much trading. Because I think if you're an alt trader, like you're not doing it on Coinbase.
I agree. However, if you run a simulation of the last Bitcoin mania and you say, and these alts are on Coinbase, they would have gone crazy. Like if people could have been buying, remember how-
But
like,
these alts aren't on Coinbase.
They're on. You can get them through Coinbase, can't you, Bat?
Yeah, but you have to buy them on a desktop through Coinbase Pro.
That's yeah, but what, everyone has. I mean, Coinbase. The difference between Coinbase and Coinbase Pro is nominal, right? It's just like a different URL.
I bet that the click through rate for that between people who have the
Coinbase
app. All right,
I'll buy that. But do you remember during the last mania, like how people were just Googling how to buy Ripple?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that second jump between a primary Bitcoin exchange and all exchange is still huge. And if it's Bitcoin easy to buy those alts during the next mania, I do think we probably will see another Ethereum or another thing that just, like, goes buck wild.
Or it could just be Ethereum.
Or it could be Ethereum. Ethereum has, like, been weirdly quiet recently.
I know.
Have you noticed that?
I was thinking about buying some. I actually might buy some after this show.
It seems like we're going to have to talk about this on when we do the book club with David Z. Morris, which I'm scheduling, pick up the book. But Vitalik was at that conference with the guy who wrote Radical Markets. And it's almost like Vitalik is, like, thinking about a political run right now more than, like, pumping the Ethereum price.
That would be...
Is Vitalik a U.S. citizen?
He's not allowed to run for president for the same reason I can't run for president.
Why? Too much trolling in your past?
He wasn't... Can you imagine the stuff they would dig up on me? no, we weren't born in the United States. Vitalik was born in Canada.
I didn't know you weren't born in the United States.
No, I was born in Korea. So I can't run for president.
When did you move to America?
Like when I was like 2 months old. And my parents already lived here, but they had me in the United States.
So, but Schwarzenegger. So you could be a governor, but you can't be the president.
Yeah, I can't be president. You have to be born in the United States to be president. That's why the Obama birther stuff mattered.
Right.
Okay. Do you want to talk about rap tragedy?
Sure.
Okay. So last night, and this is a very sad story, and Nipsey Hussle, you know, the rapper in Los Angeles and guy who was doing a lot of entrepreneurial stuff in that area, trying to restore Crenshaw, which is the neighborhood he grew up in, was murdered. And in some of the stories that were coming out, you know, like people were recounting the ways in which they had interactions with him. And one thing that kept coming up, which was that he would talk to them about like fiat currency and Bitcoin, you know? And so I did some research on this because I didn't know about this. But, you know, like he seems to have had in these interviews, or at least what he's been saying in these interviews, that he got into Bitcoin in 2013, right? So pretty early. And what he saw in it was a possibility for his community, which is like, you know, like South Central Los Angeles, Crenshaw corridor, to try and have some sort of economic determinism that was outside of like what he felt was a rigged economic system, rigged banking system, a rigged loan system. And that if they could accumulate wealth in cryptocurrency, that if cryptocurrency had mainstream adoption, that they would have financial independence, you know? And I found this to be really fascinating. It actually dovetails with a lot of what you and I talk about, which is that when we're bullish about crypto, we're not just making fun of it, that this is the case that we generally come up with, which is that, like, outside of politics, right? Like, Nipsey Hussle is not, like, an alt-right guy, you know? Like, he's not, like...
Definitely not.
He's not like a Ludwig von Mises like libertarian who like only eats meat, you know?
No.
Like, it's like a
Rolling 60 Crip.
Yeah, but his ideas are generally progressive, but also like kind of like outside of the state and anarchic. Like, how do we build like a self-sufficient system? And the one thing I thought about all that was that, like, you know, like right now, like the level at which it takes for something to be completely disqualified from people's curiosity for a certain amount of the media and for a certain amount of people on the left, especially on the progressive left, is just any sort of whiff of alt-right or any sort of whiff of like sort of libertarianism. And then they completely dismiss the idea altogether. And I actually think that this is very emblematic of that, you know, which is just like, when people are writing about Bitcoin during the last 2 years, you know, like nobody bothered to really focus on this. Nobody bothered to think that, hey, this guy who's doing all this great stuff within his community and building all these businesses, part of his foundational belief is that we need to get off the fiat currency system, and that actually, especially marginalized groups, should get off the fiat currency system and should try and build wealth through a separate system. Now, that's you and my, like, both of our cases for crypto is basically that, right? Like, that...
It's certainly one of the biggest ones,
like,
yeah.
Like, independent people who don't want to be part of these systems have some alternative for that. And I don't know, I think the thing that frustrated the most about it was that, I even see it with, like, Andrew Yang's run for president, which I think is absurd, and I think UBI is probably a bad idea, and he certainly should not
be. Are you eligible to be vice president?
The Yang Gang?
because we've been talking about the whole Yang Kang ticket,
yeah, Yang
and
Gang.
You didn't bring up the possible forged birth certificate here.
All it took for people to stop taking Andrew Yang's presidency seriously, even though he's still like doing better than like Cory Booker,
yeah,
or certainly like Kirsten Gillibrand or like Amy Klobuchar, is that like people like, oh, some of the alt-right guys are making memes about it, and then everybody dismisses it.
See, I don't think people have totally dismissed it. I think the Yang candidacy is quite alive, but we can discuss that.
No, I mean the mainstream media, like colleagues at like, you know, places like the New York Times or whatever.
They were going to dismiss Yang no matter what.
No, that's what I mean. But like that was their excuse, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's just a bunch of alt-right guys making memes, when I don't think the reality of that is true at all. Like, I think Yang actually has a real constituency.
It's just a bunch of memes making memes. Everything's a bunch of memes now.
Basically what you're describing is young people when you say like a bunch of memes
making
people.
Bunch of frivolous bullshit.
Yeah.
Bunch of fucking SoundCloud rap.
I think it really hurt crypto over the past 2 years. And I don't think it's necessarily crypto's fault. And, you know, you and I have basically over the past few weeks said that like people need to stop blaming the media for everything.
Yep.
And people in crypto especially need to stop being like, oh, the media had it out for us. But I think that you can make a viable argument that the focus on stuff like the Bitcoin, whatever, in San Francisco or Bitcoin-topia, not that that many people figured, or like Puerto-topia or whatever, the thing in Puerto Rico, and absolutely no focus on things like the stuff that Nipsey Hussle was doing. I do think that that is reflective of a bias in the media, and that the mainstream of the mainstream, sort of what I call the premium tier, they just wanted to dismiss it, and that's reflective in those types of stories.
I don't play media critic. You're, of course, the licensed media critic on this program.
Not licensed, but like, you know.
Under the table media critic.
Twitter, yeah.
I keep coming back to something that I don't remember if it was Marty Bent or his co-host Matt O'Dell said when we did a live show with them, which is basically, hey, Bitcoin's just a bunch of code. It's just a program that runs itself. It's totally agnostic to ideology. And we have a lot of trouble processing the idea that anything can be agnostic to ideology.
We
imbue everything with ideology.
Okay, but so with that, I disagree to a certain extent, right?
Okay, well, let me finish and then come back to it.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of like, you know the movie Being There with Peter Sellers? Peter Sellers is...
Wonderful, wonderful movie.
Is he...
Chauncey Gardner.
He's Chauncey Gardner. Yeah. He's Chauncey Gardner. And basically, he's like a blank slate with everyone projects their own desires, and he just sort of listens, and he becomes the president based on this. Or he becomes like does he become the president?
He's not becoming the president. What are you talking about? He becomes like the head of a bank.
Yeah, because he massively succeeds.
Yeah, because financial people are coming.
Like,
to
he's
him
a
and
genius.
Like, what do you think's gonna happen? And he is a base. Yeah.
That's pretty much how I see Bitcoin. If you're like looking for like alt-right and memes, you'll find that. If you're looking for the future of the financial system, you'll find that. If you're looking for Venezuelans who want to bring their wealth out of the country, you'll find that. It's pretty much like game to serve whatever role you want to cast.
Okay, I disagree with that. Like, okay. I don't, because I think it's more like Reddit, in that, like, Reddit will say that it is an agnostic platform, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or Facebook would say that too. We're just a platform, man, and people just do what they want on the platform. But the people who work on, like, let's say Bitcoin Core, right? Yep. They are generally of the same political mindset when you say an economic mindset.
I would agree, but here's the difference. I feel like when you look at Facebook or Reddit, the people are fucking sitting there pulling the strings. The code for Bitcoin is just sitting there. Anyone can go see it.
But
even playing field.
But they do have developers, right? And you would say that on balance, the people who are into crypto right now and they're the most vocal of crypto are one type of person. And so it is not a misrepresentation by the media. This is what I'm saying. It is not a misrepresentation by the media to say that this is true. What has been always frustrating to me, and this is something that we talked about with Maria Bastillos when we had her on the show when she talked about Civil, which is that, like, I really think that a lot of people on the left or on the progressive side are so shut down by this, you know, and are so afraid of it that they don't actually see what you're seeing, which is, like, we can make this work for us too. Like, if you are really concerned about global warming and you feel like you have to completely separate yourself from, you know, like, the global banking system and you need to start a commune somewhere, like, there's uses for Bitcoin for you, you know? Like, there's uses for all this sort of stuff. They just lack the imagination to get there because, I sound like fucking Steven Pinker right now, but, like, you know, like, I think that they just, they see it as verboten in a way that it shouldn't be. And that's where I do agree with you. But I don't think that, like, I think that saying, like, Bitcoin is just code, man, I think that is, that's, like, a little bit too far.
Okay, I also do think things are happening in that direction. If you look at radical markets, which we're reading right now, and some of the things that are coming out from a theory, philosophy, economics perspective, there are people who are projecting, like, we made our, like, Scorched Earth Wasteland Bitcoin movie. There's an Ethereum, like, movie where all property is collectivized. I mean, like, there are, like, extreme socialist crypto outcomes that people are at least, like, writing the movie of in their mind.
Yeah.
And just what you said about Nipsey Hussle, I was thinking about, you know, tell me if I'm wrong. You were born in Korea, and I did not know that until right now. But generally, immigrant communities and other marginalized communities, the way that people establish a foothold in America is acquiring real estate often.
Yeah.
Like, that's generally seen as, like, a path in immigrant and marginalized communities to stability and to the American dream.
Or, like, businesses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ideally, both. You buy a storefront and you open a small business, and that's how you make your kids have a better life than you had and how you sort of, like, invest in America.
Yeah, and the way that you get that is through, I mean, like, I think I know, but, you know, the way that you acquire those things is through intra-community loans, you know,
exactly.
And intra-community banks, yeah.
And it's a way for the community to build up its collective wealth,
yeah.
Which is a form of bargaining power in America. And we've always looked at physical assets as the way to do that. Like, you know, yeah, like, buy a storefront, you know, like, invest in America. Property is going to be worth more. Like, real estate has always been a good investment in America. And it feels in that Nipsey Hussle example, like, Bitcoin actually represents sort of a virtual foothold for people, that investing in Bitcoin, which is sort of outside of the state and outside of other financial systems, which may be either predatory or biased against certain communities, allow you to establish some of the same things people established by buying and opening stores. But as we've seen in 21st century American life, people are less likely to want to buy cars, buy houses, run stores. Retail's not a great business in America right now,
thanks to Amazon. Yeah, yeah.
So in a way, I see Bitcoin as sort of the, like, 21st century, like, buy real estate, buy property.
Okay, that's going too far, but component of it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think we've seen how through, like, gentrification and various other things, like, people can sort of undermine the promise of property holding, and that people can go into communities and buy them up, and that banding together collectively, economically, may have some sort of, like, yeah, like you and your community all like stake your Bitcoin and it offers like small Bitcoin loans. Yeah, but that's loans.
It's not crazy. No, it's not crazy. There's two things that I would say about that. The first is that, like, let's use a very clear example that is a big problem in poor communities, especially poor communities of color, and by that is payday loans, right?
Huge problem.
So, like, if within your community you say that we own these businesses and you can come in and you can work for me, and I know that you're short on cash, right? And I'm going to pay you in crypto, and these stores accept crypto, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no payday loan problem. Like, you don't have to deal with the banks. You don't have to deal with any of that stuff. That currency is there because it is being used a lot. So he talked a lot about use cases, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, he wanted mainstream adoption. And so I know that he was thinking along these lines. And this is not to say that he's like some sort of prophet of crypto, but I think that he was clearly a sharp person, you know?
Yeah.
And it is just an example of a prominent person who has gone down the path of crypto to the point where they're making these sorts of thoughts. Is that if there is more adoption, if it is more of a mainstream thing, then the amount that we already have will go up. And that, like, you know, like Glenn Lowry has written about this quite a bit. It was just like economist at Brown, who is controversial for other reasons, but like I don't think his work is controversial, which is that like you have these generations of poverty, generational cycles of poverty,
yep,
and they're very difficult to break because of all the predatory stuff that is built on top of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the best way to break all of that, which is to completely create an economic system that is outside of those predatory systems? I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea. But it is it's an idea.
It's a big idea.
Yeah, it is a big idea.
Well, are you familiar at all with, like, the history of credit unions in America?
Yeah.
Similar idea.
Yep, that's why
Band together. So, like, yes, payday loaning is, like, the lowest form of predation. But in a bigger idea level, real estate loans are extremely biased in America. They're openly biased.
Yep.
They're heavily based on credit scores, which are biased. So people get together and they're like, hey, I'm willing to stake my money to a credit union bank that lends to people in my community. Now, maybe that's like a slightly riskier place to put your money, but you believe in it, et cetera. I think that crypto opens the idea for people to generate those kind of ideas totally outside of the banking system.
Yep.
Even credit unions are within the banking system. They're like a form of collective banking that people... My parents were like in a credit union in Iowa City when I was like born. Like, it's just like a big deal, like small business net loans, all these kinds of things. And I'm not surprised that someone like Nipsey Hussle would have this kind of exposure to Bitcoin, because in poor communities in America, a lot more money is held in cash. People are more suspicious of the banking system. And there are like, I'm not saying Nipsey Hussle was a drug dealer, but he was certainly like, from a culture in which drug dealing plays a major role. These are where people want to keep a lot of money off the books in a way that the government can't easily seize or investigate your finances and assets, because that is like a crooked way that people go after people in poor communities, is through seizure, like not even actually convicting them of crime, taking their money.
Yeah.
So, you know, we always say, like, do you really need Bitcoin if you're like a wealthy white American? Probably not. But there are so many different forms of life in America that have different use cases for something like crypto. I think that one's like fascinating.
Yeah,
like,
that's I am totally with you. And that's where I just feel like this failure of imagination thing is also on the crypto people's side. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, why is that message not out there? You know, like why are crypto people talking about like libertarian values and thinking absolutely nothing about like the gigantic market of people that you could very easily make a good case for crypto about, and instead just like trying, you know, just trolling all the time. Like I even this new like group of like you know, like post-millennial socialists that are out there, which is a real movement, they have the same problems with the banking system too. Like none of them have any money either. And I just don't understand why they don't sort of think about things in this sort of way. And I think part of the reason why they don't think about things in this sort of way isn't because, part of it is, I think, because they are a little incurious, especially the socialists. But I think part of it is just that crypto has not made the pitch to them, you know?
Well, as we said early on, there's no CEO of Bitcoin, and therefore there's no marketing team for Bitcoin. So how the message of an idea that has no leadership or team,
yeah,
like comes out, it's a fascinating contradiction.
I'm just saying that, like,
there's many people who are going out there and talking about like the Bitcoin gold standard, you know?
Sure. But those people don't work for Bitcoin.
No. I agree. But yeah. What is interesting to me is like one of the only people who was going out making this case for Bitcoin was Nipsey Hussle.
And that's what I'm talking about when I say crypto moderatism. It's not like crypto moderatism.
This definition has changed like every single week. But go ahead.
Crypto moderatism's critics have many criticisms. But to me, crypto moderatism isn't the idea that crypto will only have a small impact. It's the idea that it will work within the existing system rather than supplant it. And to me, all of that crypto extremism is basically just like crypto ISIS. They're like, I want to fucking restart society under libertarian ideals.
Crypto ISIS.
Like, it's people who want to restart the world.
Yeah, they want the caliphate.
Yeah, it's the caliphate vision. And I'm pushing the American vision. Like, we keep being America and paying taxes and having rule of law, but things like crypto potentially undermine the banking system and it becomes easier to get a real estate loan in Crenshaw because a bunch of people who live in Crenshaw have put up their houses as collateral for some sort of a collective lending scheme.
Yeah, no, that I think, and that's where I hope things will go. I just find it more interesting, and I actually think it's easier to get behind than like Saifedean Ammous's, like, you know, vision of an entirely transplanted world with no wars, right? Which is like, you know, it's just stupid. Something with pragmatic examples like that, where like the vision is not just fuck everybody, but it's like, hey, maybe we can help people. Like, it would be a nice change. All right. Do you want to read some questions?
You want to do a little mailbag?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a little mailbag. We haven't done a mailbag in a while.
No.
Keep the mailbag coming in. If we get some more questions, we'll start doing a quick mailbag at the end of every show. This was when we talked about people getting kicked off of Coinbase. He said, yeah, that happened to me too, both from Coinbase and Circle. I'm just a shady guy. But they don't tell you why you got kicked, just bye. So maybe they just don't like me.
No, so, he did something shady.
Yeah, I feel like that guy's kind of like burying the lead here. Why did you get kicked off of Coinbase and Circle?
Yeah, I have a friend who had the same thing happen to him. He got kicked off of Coinbase. And I was like, he was really mad about it. And I was like, well, what were you doing? And he was like, I was buying fake IDs. And I was like, and he was like, how did they know? And I was like, actually, it was a really good question. Like, how did they know?
Yeah.
That the wallet address, which actually makes me think that maybe crypto is like the biggest honeypot ever. Yeah. But like immediately, the second that he sent it to that wallet, they booted him off of it. And they didn't tell him why.
Well, for starters, unquestionably, crypto is the biggest honeypot ever. Like, even in the bull case, it's the biggest honeypot ever. In addition to being the biggest honeypot ever, here's my prediction about Coinbase. I think they've mapped a lot of the giant network that is Bitcoin. I think they know what a lot of the addresses are.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I think Coinbase is probably, and I'm saying Coinbase, but I could say the same thing about Gemini and Kraken also. Let's say the big five American exchanges. With their data set, you should really be able to map almost every common Bitcoin transaction. Like, anyone who's accepting Bitcoin cyclically should eventually be on the Coinbase radar. And it's not that hard to be like, okay, like, they've been 8 transactions with this Bitcoin address. Like, what is it? Oh, it's a fake ID place.
Yeah.
Wait, why was an adult buying fake IDs?
I can't tell you that, but it was not for bad purposes.
So they have this massive web. The first level, which I think like relying on exchanges reduces the censorship resistance of Bitcoin, is simply that like you can just block certain people from buying. But I think in a larger sense, we're allowing these companies to become basically the Google of the crypto network, where
bad.
It knows where everything is and everything everyone's doing. And that's just obviously bad.
That's
like
bad.
Anything interesting you can do in Bitcoin, if it has to get validated or kicked off, I mean, and then it just becomes PayPal. PayPal kicks people off all the time. They like fucked Satoshi over on that toy train transaction. You know, this is literally why they made Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't get PayPal to do what he wanted, he made Bitcoin.
So the creator of Bitcoin too will be someone who's like, he was trying to buy a fake ID and he's like, fuck Coinbase.
I mean, I feel weird about the fact that we're basically deplatforming protesters here, but like, I do think that like widespread exchange deplatforming would make crypto meaningless. I don't think it's going to happen because I think people will just leave Coinbase in these places as they become the Palantir of crypto.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think anything that breaks up Coinbase's monopoly is good.
Jay, Aaron, not sure if you noticed that crypto even has a place in TurboTax. See screenshot attached. Basically, they're like asking you like all these different things about like what you did this year. And one of them is bought and sold cryptocurrency. And I actually did this because I wanted to do TurboTax in order to see, like, I have a tax guy, but I was like, how different would it be if I put it in myself? So I did it, and I actually synced my my Coinbase directly in TurboTax.
Really?
Super easy. One click. You just log in Coinbase. So anyone who's out there about to pay their taxes, I know it's April. If you've used Coinbase and I think a few other exchanges, they will sync directly with TurboTax.
Was it brutal?
No, I took a loss.
Oh, that's right. That's good. Maybe I'll do it, Jay, too.
Do you remember what happened in 2018? There's nothing that would cause me to need to pay taxes that happened in 2018.
All right.
Love the show. Big fan. I can't remember if you guys have ever discussed this before, but can you talk about how and why you end up choosing the Hatsune Miku song for the show's theme music? I never heard it before CoinTalk, but it's perfect.
Oh.
I can tell you the origin story of it.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, you actually caught like an alternate version by like a Finnish polka version of the song on someone's like Vine video or something.
On their TikTok, yeah.
Yeah, on their TikTok. Yeah. So the song is actually a traditional Scandinavian polka that has been brought out through many generations. Actually, I think a Finnish quartet won the Eurovision Song Contest with it in the 80s.
Really?
Singing it as an a cappella song.
Is that
song.
When it became like super...
That was like, a, like that was like the first... Again. That was the first time it was like a number one charting yeah. signal. So I was in Vietnam and I was riding a moped, which is basically riding a moped in Southeast Asia is my favorite way to live. That's how I would be, what I would be doing every day if I could. Love cruising around on a moped.
Okay, well, what city
I
though?
I passed, this was kind of like in the countryside near...
But this wasn't in like Saigon or Hanoi?
No, this was okay. like a small town.
I was about to be extremely impressed at your moped skills if you could ride one in Saigon.
I did ride one in Ho Chi Minh. Is Ho Chi Minh has Saigon? That's right.
Yeah, it's Saigon. How did you do that?
I just got on it and
it's
I went with the
crazy
flow of
there,
traffic.
Dude. Like it's like so crowded.
I got bumped a few times, which was scary.
You didn't fall.
I didn't fall. It's pretty hard to fall on a moped. I would not
have the courage to scoot around Saigon.
So I'm scooting around in the countryside, yeah. And I pass kind of like a school community center with like 800 kids all doing a synchronized dance routine to the CoinTalk theme song.
Really?
And so I was like, holy shit. I was like, this is the most incredible thing of my life. I took a video of it, and I tried to Shazam it, but I didn't have any data service.
Uh-huh.
So I was sitting there in my Shazam. And I was like, no, like, how am I going to find out what this song is?
Yeah.
So I eventually came back and played the video and then Shazammed it with a different phone. And after several tries, it came up as the Field Day Rhythm, it was like a dance hall song. And then the version that we use our theme song is Hatsune Miku, who is a Japanese robotic fictional character that singing over the dance hall rhythm Field Day, and that's what the kids were dancing to out in the field.
Okay.
So that's how I came across it.
I saw a version of it on TikTok this weekend, and it was this guy I watched who I don't know what country is in it. It looks like Kyrgyzstan or something like that. And he makes kebabs in extremely elaborate ways, and in one of his kebab making videos, it was in the background.
All right, last question.
Okay.
If anyone wants to just search for Hatsune Miku, I forget how you find it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll put it in the show notes. Question for mailbag consideration. You guys seemingly have done so much miscellaneous buying and selling throughout the duration of the show, but I never hear you talk about tax implications. Not an accident. How complicated have your taxes been to do? Have you paid some crypto tax expert to take care of them for you or filed them yourselves? Not wanting to deal with the tax headache is more or less the only reason why I haven't dabbled nearly as much as I'd otherwise be inclined to, which I suppose is probably a blessing in disguise. That's from Brian.
Okay, Brian. And this is the truth. It is not just to, you know, so I don't say something incriminating. I did do my taxes when I had coins properly, and it sucked.
Okay, so Jay, I think this echoes your experience, which is one of the reasons you've been kind of slow to FOMO in, is you're like, alt trading is just like a tax nightmare.
Yep.
You've brought up the idea that theoretically every single alt trade you do is a taxable event.
Yeah.
I personally, I hope the IRS is not listening, look at crypto more holistically, which is, I know how much money I put in. I have yet to cash out any money. I'm significantly down, so I know that I don't owe any taxes right now. I theoretically could probably take a loss in 2018 if I wanted to, but I'm just going to hold off, and when I cash out, I'll pay taxes on any money I cash out. I did input my Coinbase to TurboTax, and I realized a small loss in 2018, which I'm just not reporting. I'm just waiting until I actually make or lose any money in fiat before I deal with the tax situation. Jay has warned me that this is incorrect.
Well, I mean, I don't know either, but...
Should we have, like, a tax expert on to tell us?
It doesn't sound...
The reason I haven't wanted to have a tax background is I don't want to find out I'm wrong.
Yeah, let's just stay in the...
But I will say, crypto taxes are extremely complicated, and there's a number of contradictions, and I've brought those up. Like, you were like, Lammer, they knew how much you bought on Coinbase. Like, you got to, like, figure out your taxes. And it's like, well, how do you know that I didn't send some of that money that I bought on Coinbase and buy something with crypto?
Yep.
Like... There's no way to, like, holistically know exactly how much of what someone bought on Coinbase is still in their possession. They could have gambled it away as you did.
Yeah.
Like, you're not paying gains on the money you gambled away. If Bitcoin goes to $20,000 tomorrow, you're not going to pay taxes on what you gambled and lost, right?
I hope not.
Okay. So there's gray areas no matter
what. That would be horrible.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Read Radical Markets. Sometime in the next week, I'm hoping to get David Z. Morris in here. You picked up the book?
Yeah, I downloaded it.
You're midway. Okay, we are making our way through Radical Markets, and we'll be talking about that soon. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, April 1st at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $4,140.
That was Coin Talk. We're edited by James Nicholson. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our partner in all this is Medium, medium.com/cointalk for all the transcripts. Send us an email, hi@cointalk.show, and we'll do a little more mailbag if we get some. See you next week.